This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to this particular talk. My name's Natalie Ison, and this is Andrew Pearce and Peter Buckey, and Hi. We're all objects conservators here at the National Museum. I'm just going to give you a bit of an overview about what we're talking about today. We have a variety of products here, and we're going to discuss cleaning, particularly our shiny silver things, and also mentioning trophies, medals, and cleaning and storage that you can do and that we do at the museum. So something else about the conservation team at the National Museum is that there are three different teams. We've got the objects team here, and we have paper and textiles and large technology as well. And something very wonderful and important that's going down in the temporary gallery at the moment is that our labs, we've moved half of our labs over to Acton to show you what we do. So until the 28th of January, between 11 and 3 every day, at least two of those labs are staffed. So if you'd like to come down and have a look at what we do and maybe ask us some questions in addition to what we're doing today, we can do that. Just a quick note, please turn off or place on silent your mobile phones. And also note that because we're filming this and recording this presentation, by participating in the question and answer session at the end, you are providing consent to be filmed. So if you don't want to be filmed, just bear that in mind and please don't participate. And I might hand over to Andrew to talk about medals.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Howdy, folks. The first thing that we were going to do was talk about treatment of metals at home. I know a lot of people have them. Can we get the overhead? Oh, fabulous. as far as home treatment of metals, really try and do as little as possible is the take-home message from my point of view. To illustrate that and explain where I'm coming from, I want to look at a particular small grouping of metals that somebody might typically have if they had a family member who was active in World War I. Pretty much everybody in the Allies who turned up in World War I ended up with the 1914-18 Campaign Medal and the Victory Medal. Distinguished Service Orders, there were about 8,000 that were given. As far as mentioned in dispatches, oak leaves, I'm not sure of the numbers, but it was quite a common valour medal. And this is what that medal grouping looks like. You've got the DSO on this side, the 1418 campaign medal in the middle, the Allied Victory Medal on the end, and the oak leaves are usually pinned into the ribbon of the Allied of the Victory Medal. Looking at what can go wrong if people are dealing with metals at home, with the DSO, the white is a proper enamel. The red and the green in the centre on the leaves and around the crown are just a lacquer, and they're solvent in ethanol, acetone, nail polish remover, whatever else. So if anybody went to clean this and they were using solvent, they can pretty easily just completely destroy the middle of the DSO, which is not something you want to do. The Victory Medal is a funny one. And even talking to folks who have a lot more experience than me in medals, they don't actually know what the coating is that's been applied to this. It looks like it's a bronze medal, but it's not bronze. It's just been minted in copper, and then it's had a lacquer layer put over the top. And it's very, very easy, either through abrasion or scratching or metals banging into each other, to put holes in that lacquer layer. And as soon as you get a small hole in a large piece of metal, a small hole in the lacquer and a large piece of metal, the exposed area corrodes very, very quickly. And because you've got a hole in the lacquer, you can't clean it off by polishing it. If you start polishing, you just make the thing worse. You increase the size of the hole. So it's very easy to damage the lacquer on those. And you can't undo the damage. The last one that I wanted to cover is the oak leaves. They're a similar alloy. They're not the same alloy as they use in making Victoria crosses. And they're patinated, which means they're deliberately made to look brown. And they're designed to get darker and darker and darker over time. And if you were to go through and just polish them up and get them looking nice and shiny, you've basically ruined what they're supposed to look like. So, the 1418 medal in the middle is pretty much silver, and you're unlikely to do anything aside from, you know, possibly scratch it if you attack that. But what that does illustrate is that by not knowing what you're doing, it's very easy to trash 75% of the items in that metal group. This is just a very tiny example. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different sorts of metals. I mean, even in the Allied side going through World War I, World War II, not even getting to Vietnam, Korea, you've got, you know, a couple of hundred metals, and they all have different metal makeup. Their base metals are different. I've skipped ahead slightly. All right. We'll get to that. Best treatment is to try and prevent the damage in the first place. Now, this is not a metal. It's just a little christening cup. You can possibly see that it's purple and blue and, you know, quite horrendously tarnished all over. That is purely due to being in a cupboard in storage where timber vapours, rosewood, oak, are two that are very bad. Almost all of the modern manufactured timbers, MDF, craftwood, are terrible for metal surfaces, especially things like silver. So we have here a group of metals that have been given to us for the purposes of demonstration. And this is how they're normally stored. They're normally stored in a little wooden box, which is what we would suggest you don't do. They don't quite fit. They're all crammed in together. The box is velvet-lined. Velvet often also gives off vapours that are damaging to metals. And the best thing that you can do for these metals is to stop them banging into each other. That's what's going to cause you more damage and scratching than anything else. So if we can lay them down on the table, we just get some acid-free tissue paper, and then one at a time, we just wrap each of the metals so that it's not going to bang into the one next door. It's not the most elegant solution from the point of view of display, but as a general rule, most people aren't displaying their metals for a long amount of time. And if you did want to, you know, it's an easy matter to get the paper off. Excuse us. So they just get individually wrapped up so they're not going to hit each other. There's a very wide range of different sorts of metal that have been used, the base metal for manufacturing metals over the years. Some of it is quite high-grade alloy, you know, sterling silver, special... The Victoria crosses are actually made out of... it's a bronze that was... they're from a pair of old cannon from the Crimean War, I think it was. And they're gradually working their way through. They're nearly at the end of cannon number one. They've been giving them out for a very long time, so... these all get individually wrapped. But certainly some of the other metals, there are some Chinese and late war German metals from World War II where the alloys are not terribly high in quality and can be quite problematic. So these all just fold up neatly like that. And then if we want to stop them getting attacked by timber vapours or any other sort of pollutant, the easiest thing to do is just slip them into a Ziploc bag. And in that way they won't bang into each other. They won't get scratched. And any polishing and cleaning that gets done really only needs to be done once. And the rest of the time, they're stored happily. Some of the metal ribbons, are quite light fugitive, the colours. So if they can be stored in the dark, that's better. But really, if you're going to look after a set of metals, that's pretty much the best thing you can do with them. As I was saying, the metal alloy, the plating, the coatings, the lacquers, the patinas, the paint can vary very, very, very widely. And even experienced conservators such as ourselves will get in touch with somebody who's got a lot more experience on metals before we start doing anything to them. So our advice would be that you get in touch with something like the Australian Institute for Conservation of Cultural Materials and get a specialist conservator to help you out if you need to work on metals beyond what I've just done there. And that's not... Yes. There we are. That's the web address for the AICCM, if you need to get in touch with them. I think that pretty much covers what I wanted to say in the short term, so I'll hand over to Peter.
Yeah, and leading on from the storage situation at home, and speaking of pollutants and things, one of the most wonderful thing we've probably all got in our cupboard at home somewhere is an old silver pot or a trophy, and you can see here example of a silver teapot and some little silver spoons, a little cake tray, and this is your typical sort of trophy that you'd find in a club. And in the past, I guess what most people do is rely on the good old proprietary products. There's not anything wrong with using these products, but it's what you do with them afterwards. But in a conservation situation, the objects that we look after in a museum, we don't particularly want to use products like this because what you're actually doing is abrading away the surface. A lot of this stuff is silver plated, so you've got a base metal and you've got a very, very thin plate over the top of it to keep it all nice and glossy and shiny. So it ends up in the cupboard at home and it gets dragged out, you know, for the tea party. You get out your fancy spoons, you say, oh, hell, they're all black and dirty. I've got to clean them. So out with a polish, rub, rub, rub. And after about probably 25 tea parties, Mum says, oh, you know, the pot doesn't look silver anymore. It's gold. I thought I got a silver one. This is not silver. This is silver plated. You know, what have I done to it? In a club situation, cup gets put out. They've just had a footy game and they've had the big presentation. Cup gets put out in the bar. And you've got the bistro running down there with your fish and chips going and you got the bar going, and back in the old days when everyone used to light up and have a smoke and whatnot, and these things would just absolutely get covered with grot. So, again, presentation next year. Oh, we've got to get the perpetual trophy out. We better clean her up. Out with the brasso and the cloth. Rub, rub, rub. Not a good thing because you're wearing away the plating. A very, very simple solution for you to do at home, if you just follow some very, very simple steps, is get yourself a bucket of water and some dishwashing liquid. Look at that. Beautiful. It's not even radioactive. It looks it. Swirl it up a bit, and we'll use this lid here. I should be wearing gloves, but hey, I'll tell you why it's not a problem. But this lid here, I was just saying, you know, you got a lot of fat and residue and, you know, probably tobacco smoke inside a house. It's stored in a cupboard in the kitchen. You got fat from the kitchen, maybe a smoking house or off-gassing from wooden cupboards, etc. And it's all going to... silver's a great attractant for any pollutants that are in the air. If there's a pollutant in the air and see silver, it's like... a bee to a flower, you know. I'll go and sit on that and I'll destroy it and I'll make it corrode. So essentially what you want to do is you want to wash those bad things off it. Oh, this is good. Look at that. It's already starting to clean. But you can see there's quite a bit of dirt on that. It's not just something you can just hit with abrasive polish and think, oh, yeah, I'm doing the job. You might find you can just wash it like that and it'll turn up quite nice. But anyway, that's one that's... This cup's been sitting in a club with the exact environment we've been talking about. That wasn't our wash bucket, was it? No, that's okay. We'll do this. Essentially, or most importantly, whenever you're doing any of this sort of work, is whatever you're using, wash it off. Some of the old pots and things, like the old teapots where Mum's gone in with the Silvo, and you always end up with polish residues in all the little crevices and cracks and in the little turns. And the best way to get those out, get them out if you can, because they're just sitting there. They form a poultice for moisture, and underneath that moisture you get corrosion and pitting, and you lose your plating. So just a very simple toothbrush going through all the little turns and buckles, and like in this teapot, you know, got all these little decorative bits around here, and that's where you see all that white stuff, which is just going to sit there and be annoying, and you just keep adding to it every time you use products like this. So you want to get that off. You want to get a clean surface. Then you'll be left with something that's still fairly tarnished, and you think, well, what the hell am I going to do with that? Well, Mum would have got the Silvo out. Polish, polish, polish. No, don't do that. Get yourself a plastic bucket. Very important. Must be plastic, not a steel bucket, and a piece of aluminium. You can go to just a local hardware store and you can pick up aluminium, make sure there's no coating on it or anything, drop that in the bucket. Simple as that. It's warm water. And then you go to the supermarket and you look for washing soda. This is all very grandma, this, because washing soda she probably used in a bath to soak her feet after a heavy day out in the garden. But washing soda, this is bucket chemistry, literally. Washing soda, a handful of washing soda in there. And what's going to happen here is I'm going to place the lid on the piece of aluminium so it makes contact with it. A few little things you need to know when you do this at home as well. Some of these items, like a teapot, they'll have large cast handles and things. Sometimes they're hollow and they've got little holes in them. You want to identify where the holes are and you want to block them off. The best way to do that is a little bit of plasticine or even blue tack. Just block the hole off so you don't fill it up with water. So this thing is now sitting in contact with the aluminium in the solution of water and the bicarb soda, and you end up with an electrochemical process, which I'm not a chemist, so I don't know exactly how to explain it, but Andrew's a lot better at this, and he's got a magic board over here which flips and will give you the whole formula.
Right. What we're looking at with silver tarnish is actually silver sulfide. It's reacted with sulfur in the environment. So we start off, we've got 3Ag2. That's silver sulfide. And we get a piece of aluminium. And what happens is it turns into 6Ag, which is just pure silver, plus Al2S3. So what we're doing is we're actually getting a chemical reaction that's dragging the sulfur off of the silver and depositing it onto the piece of aluminium.
Yeah, your piece of aluminium will actually, after doing this process quite a bit, you can see the deposit of the product on here, on the actual silver. Now, this takes a fair bit of time to do. So, like, you know, you could be sitting there for an hour or so waiting for stuff to happen. But if you look in there and you see fizzing happening, you know something's happening. During the process, it's always good. You know, this is just a little tip that you learn on the way. Actually, now you can see that's already cleaner, and you can actually see the original previous polish marks on there. They're actually abrasions. It's actually been abraded by products like this. Occasionally, during the process, just give it a bit of a rinse off and just a light rub with a, like a T-shirt cotton type material, not a synthetic, preferably like a wool based thing or cotton, and because they're also absorbent. But you just give it a light rub over. This is black. You can't see. Sometimes you can actually see black stuff coming off if you're using a white T-shirt. So then you might say, oh, yeah, that looks pretty good. Nah, needs more. So you bung it back in. Make sure it's in contact with your little coupon of aluminium. I can show you an example here of this one. These lights are pretty bright, but I just dipped this in halfway. And you can see this side here, nice and shiny. This side here, still the original look. There was no abrasive cleaners used at all on this. So it's 100% clean. And it looks good. Now, if you want to just enhance that slightly more and you're not happy with the finish, there are products available like silver cloths. Now, these are still abrasive, but they've also got a cleaning agent within them as well, just to help lift off the stuff. But this is probably the least abrasive that you will ever need. Once you've done this first process, like you've got your dirty silverware out of Grandma's cupboard and it's now in your care, you may want to go through this process, use a silver cloth, get it all clean. You've got rid of all the old silver and everything built up inside here. And from then on, you only need to do this process very, very simply. This is a teapot here. If you look at that closely, that has never, ever been cleaned with silver or brasso or any of the other Goddard's things. It's only ever been cleaned with this method, and there are no scratches on it. Therefore, the plating that's on there. This is a teapot I got, my wife and I got for a wedding present. And I've been married 35 years, and there's not a scratch on it. So it's still there. Very, very simple method. Most important things to remember between each of your processes is rinse off. Always have your running water there. Rinse off. When you've washed you can use a little paintbrush like that to agitate the polish residues that are left in there. You can agitate those out with that or a fine toothbrush. You will effectively be doing some abrasion while you're doing it because you're removing it, you're agitating it, you're reinvigorating its solubility, and it's going to spread around and start scratching again. So you will see slightly bigger polish. You've only done it once, and you will never have to do it again. Then when you store it, I guess if you don't want to put it on display and you just want to put it away ready for the next tea party, same deal as what Andrew did with the metals. Wrap them up in say, a washed cotton. Even if it is an old T-shirt, it's been washed a few times and it's well rinsed, you can wrap it up in that, and then you can get these Ziploc bags at stationers, big ones. You know, you can get one big enough to fit that in. And you can put it in your cupboard, and it'll be ready for you when your next tea party's up, or if you want to put it on display when the family's coming over because it's a wedding present you wanted to hide and say, oh, they're coming over, where's the teapot? Oh, it's perfectly clean, bang, in the cupboard. Oh, there's the lovely teapot we gave you. It's just such a simple thing. Little things like these spoons, again, there are issues with souvenir spoons and all sorts of different, always try and work out what this little product here is made out of. This is enamel, so that's fine in any of this sort of situation. But if you've got some of those modern hand-painted ones, plastic, obviously you're going to run into issues, even if you put them through the dishwasher or through your normal washing up liquid. So that's about it. But, yeah, so very, very simple. I'll hand you over to what are we doing next?
I think we're probably going to touch on some of the things that we'd suggest people don't do. Recipes and things.
With the polishing, just to give you an example of, say, that teapot there, you've got your base metal, right? That's what the pot's made out of. Then it gets plated. Then it gets chucked in Grandma's cupboard or in the club, and you get all your dirt and your muck all over the top. And then what we're doing then is we're old style, we're going along and we're saying we need to polish it, clean it, righto. So we've cleaned that off with our abrasive polish, right? So we're back down to that surface. But while we've done that, we've actually scratched it. So we've got these pits. Next time comes around, more dirt, polish it again. Polish it again. Surface becomes thinner. Right, your surface was that thick. This is all highly exaggerated, but this is what happens. Then, eventually, after numerous polishes, you start getting down to this surface where you're actually exposing some of the brass. And that's when you see some of these objects that look quite yellow. That's actually the brass you're seeing. And no matter amount of polishing is going to make it silver again. And then eventually you've polished it all away and you're just left with your brass surface. So ideally, get away from the brass over the silver. Get onto something that's less invasive. Do you want to talk about the copper products?
A few years ago, on an evening when I was sitting at home and bored out of my skull, I had the misfortune to turn on the television and watch Healthy, Wealthy and Wise. And Tonya Todman was talking about cleaning brass and copper stuff at home. Said, oh, really easy way to clean brass and copper. You get a lemon, you cut it in half, you sprinkle some salt on it and you rub it on your brass and copper things. And they come up all shiny. And they do for a while, and then they start turning green. Because what you're doing is etching the surface of the copper and introducing salt. And copper and salt really don't like each other. And again, we start getting into the scary chemistry. But what's going on is all of this, which is we get copper and salt and moisture, Cu plus NaCl plus H2O, and we get copper plus and chlorine minus ions in solution. They form copper chloride, which is green. And then if we add oxygen and more moisture, so we've got our oxygen, the O2 there, our moisture with the 4H2O, and CaCl2, 3 copper hydroxide, which is also bluish green. And even better, we get this one here. 2HCl, hydrochloric acid, which loves eating copper. So we get 2Cu, 2HCl, it's 2CuCl2, same stuff as we had here, plus H2. Hydrogen ions join up nicely with the chloride ions from the salt, still in solution, and make more HCl. And once you've got the chlorine in the alloy, it just keeps on going around in circles. It's what they call a cyclic corrosion process. The easiest way to stop that corrosion process, short of doing a full polish, cleaning things out, mechanically remove as much as you can. So again, toothbrush, soapy water. But the best thing you can do is get rid of the H2O and the O2. So get it dry and get it out of the air. And that'll stop the cyclic corrosion process. The H2 can't combine with the Cl if there's no moisture to provide H2 supply. These are all electrochemical processes that won't happen if things are damp. Now, polishing things is all well and good, but some things like this, for instance, is a piece of industrial equipment. It's not designed as a display piece. And if you polished it up to the nth degree and it all looked shiny and bling, it would actually look a bit ridiculous. So our recommendation would be that with something like that, once you've got it cleaned, just with doing the soapy water kind of thing to get the residue off, try and leave it alone as much as you can. And one of the... You'll notice that I'm wearing gloves. One of the things that copper and brass especially attract, like it's going out of style, is fingerprints, which etch the surface. But certainly things like the lemon and salt solution for cleaning things, we would strongly advise you don't sort of follow. You wanted to talk a bit about storage, I think, Peter?
Oh, yeah. In the museum environment, we talked about the plastic bag and the, you know, a bit of tissue paper or a good clean cotton fabric of some sort to wrap your silverware up in if you're going to hide it away in the cupboard. In the museum, we need to get access to our objects frequently because a lot of museum objects, you say, oh, yeah, we've treated them and we put them away into storage and we forget about them. We don't. We actually have to routinely go and inspect all our objects to see what is actually happening. You put them in these micro environments expecting, I'm done, I never have to look after this again. Wrong. Things still happen, even in a museum environment. So we go pretty ballistic on how we design our packaging. You can see this one's childproof. We build special boxes out of blue card, which is an acid-free. This forms basically a buffer between our already excellent environment in most of our repositories, given we have a good temperature control and good humidity control. And then we pack them away in this object away in this lovely, beautiful box. This is an object that we acquired for the Miss Australia exhibition we had a few years ago, which travelled around Australia. And just briefly, speaking of trophies, you can't actually clean this trophy without pulling it all apart. So this trophy was completely disassembled and all the parts were cleaned individually, separately. The wood was waxed. All the silver surfaces are clean. There was a lot of brasso, a lot of polish residues in all these very, very fine detailed works. It was just like a white paste. We document all the processes we do, and some of the earlier photographs you see of this in the disassembly stages, we actually photograph all the junk that's lying around. But same thing every time it got out. It came out for a display or a pageant, whatever. Someone would polish it up, you know. Quick, where's the silver? Polish up the globe. Now, this then, when we acquired it, we got it ready for exhibition. It was a curatorial intent to have it looking sparkly and new and well cared for. Not reconditioned, but clean, as if we got it in our cupboard at home and it's in nice condition and we respect it and we'd like to keep it looking nice. So it's not highly polished, it's cleaned. The oxides are removed from it. Therefore, what do we do to keep it in that condition for as long as possible? We build a nice box for it with good supports. You see these little pillars here close in on that. If we want to transport this to an exhibition, say at the National Library for a couple of days or whatever, it can go in this box in a tub and go off travelling. There's also a goldy-looking paper that you can see around here. This is, we call this intercept. It's not going to stop corrosion. It's just something that is there to attract any pollutants that may be inside the box or in any other atmosphere that it might be exposed to. The pollutants will go to this paper before it goes to that. So this is the sacrificial paper. We can then, after a period of time, say, righto, get rid of that, pull that out and put a fresh piece in it and it'll do its job again. This trophy was cleaned about 4 or 5 years ago. I actually personally did this one. And it hasn't changed one bit. We go in, have a look at it once every 12 months, open it up, have a look, yep, she's all good. Nothing happening there. Paper's still working. These are foam blocks that you see. They're all, archivally sound. They're not going to off-gas and cause any problems inside. So that's how we store them. A lot of effort's put into it. And you can see by that we really put a big effort into looking after them and preserving them. This by storing them properly and keeping them in a good, clean environment. We actually extend their life. We don't have to handle them as much. We don't have to clean and scrub and do the horrible stuff that, you know, happens with silver in a club. Speaking of, like, just quickly, I may not have mentioned, but one of the things about this process is you don't want to contaminate your solution, your cleaning, with ferrous metal. And usually what you find with these trophies, the ones you've got in your cupboards at home, they're usually made up of numerous components. This is a plastic or a Bakelite. There's a piece of aluminium on there for the tag. That's just been tagged on. If you want to clean that, simply just a soapy water. Don't do anything else with that. But that separates that from there. But you've still got a steel component there, which will react with your cleaning process. And most of the time you can remove that and you'll find the rest of it's all plated. Every trophy is different. A lot of trophies are manufactured by people who have numerous components. You go in and you say, I want that, that and that, and they bung it together, and that's why they can look as hideous as this thing and as elaborate as that. But, so just keeping that in mind when you're using this cleaning process, try not to introduce too many foreign metals all at once. Brass and the silver goes all right. And one other tip, reminder, about perforations in hollow castings or hollow components, block them off. That's about it for storage. Yeah, just if you want to buy this stuff, if you really, really want it, you can get it. You as a customer can buy it. You just go to the web and you look up Intercept Paper or archival packaging, and you can read through. Most suppliers will give you product information and uses for those products.
Okay, so we're going to start a question and answer session. Just a little note to wait and for the microphone before speaking, because we are filming, so we'd like to hear you and they'd also like to hear you. So does anyone have any questions at all?
You say you want to look after copper, but I want to polish copper and brass. What do? I got a veteran car and I want a bright radiator that's shiny and brass and nice. What do?
Yep. The best thing that you can do is do your polishing using things like Brasso, but then once you've done it, make sure that you're getting all of the residue off so that you don't have any of the little green bits of leftover Brasso grime.
Your brushes.
In the crevices.
Get it all out.
The follow-up cleaning is going to be the most important thing. The other thing, you have an advantage with copper, with copper and brass, in that they're not a plating. They're solid the whole way through. A lot of the silver things are silver over brass or copper. They're not solid, and so you can go through the plate. When you're dealing with something like a brass radiator, it's not as much of a hassle because you've got, you know, 2 or 3 millimetres worth of brass there. So that wouldn't be a problem, but the most important thing is to get that residue off. We do sometimes put a lacquer coating over the top of copper and brass when we're treating them in the laboratory, but for something like a radiator where it's getting hot and it's out in an environment where you want to get as much airflow over the metal as you can, that's not really a viable option.
The marine coronometers that are currently being serviced in our open exhibition, our conservation exhibition, all the brasswork in that actually has a shellac on it, and shellac's just bee's wings, isn't it, with alcohol.
Dissolved beetle bodies, I think.
Beetle bodies and all that, and you can actually get different colours. If you're using that on a motor vehicle part that has a lot of heat, you're just going to peel it off. If you put on your radiator cowling, the heat's just going to burn it back off again. So you're better off leaving it raw. But the most important thing is, if you're going to use abrasive polishers, wash the residues off. Give it a really good rinse afterwards.
Yes, it won't go in the bucket of water. This is true.
I wrap my silver-plated tea sets and that up in Glad wrap,
and that seems to keep the
keep,
so that works okay.
Yep, that's good.
Yeah, I think it would be worth putting something like a layer of acid-free tissue underneath the Glad Wrap, just so that you're not running the risk of any of the plasticizers. Because, I mean, Glad Wrap as a plastic film has a lot of plasticizer in it to make it as soft and stretchy as it is. And those plasticizer compounds, the molecules, can react quite badly with the metal. So if you can get a barrier, something that will absorb it before it gets to the silver, that's better.
A cloth or your acid-free tissue, that's something
To keep the air and the pollutants out, great solution. That's fine.
You can purchase acid-free tissue in most stationers, or you know, like the craft shops and things like that.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I've got a second question: is silver jewellery? I used just alfoil with washing powder.
Correct.
Is that okay?
Yep. Aluminium foil.
Aluminium foil.
Yep. With silver jewellery, if it's stone set. You just need to be aware that some stones, like, say, lapis lazuli, some turquoises, the really porous stones, you want to make sure that you don't put that in any of this sort of situation, because the porosity in the stones will allow this solution to get in there, and then you're getting a bad reaction. You get expansion and discoloration of the... of dyes, if there are any introduced dyes. So you've got to be careful of that. But if it's a you know, like a faceted stone, never put an opal ring in something like this, for example, a triplet or a doublet, because you'll split the laminations apart and you'll end up with, well, you know, a pretty ugly looking stone.
Can I just have one more? Sorry. With stuff that's brass, mm-hmm. can you put brass in that same...
It won't. The brass won't clean the same way, but the result is not the same.
It's the silver stuff.
But if, like, for example, this lid here, which is brass and silver plated, if there is brass exposed, it will not be affected by this process.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
But it won't clean it.
If I had a brass vase or something, I've never put brass in with any of the I used to buy those plates you get, you know, with the washing powder stuff.
Yep.
Or washing soda.
Yep.
And then I moved on to the cheaper aluminium foil. But I've never put brass in, but you're saying that I could do brass the same way.
Not really.
I don't think you'd get a result.
No.
Right, okay.
You've still got to probably use some sort of a cleaner.
Okay,
it's far more a sulphur-specific process.
Yeah, with the silver.
Cleaning, say, an old silver teapot, sometimes in the handle, there's different sections of handle.
Correct.
And they're separated from each other by what may be ivory.
Yeah, plastic, ivory. When you're dumping your object in the solution, say, for example, this teapot, you'd have one piece with one leg standing on it. That will cover everything that's in contact with that leg. This is not in contact with the aluminium, so you may wish to... The lid broke. Don't tell the wife. You could put it on the side like that, so the handle's in contact with that and the leg is in contact with that coupon.
And would the ivory be at risk?
No. I've had really good success with the ivory. I mean, ivory's bone, and it doesn't seem to react at all. So it's fairly dense, strong.
Just a couple of small questions. You were talking about badges before. Does that apply also to coins?
With regard to what?
Well, cleaning silver and copper and...
I mean, every time you're going through an abrasive cleaning process, then you're removing surface. And so you'll be gradually losing detail. Certainly with some old coins, it's preferred that they have a patina rather than that they look like they've been just freshly polished.
They preserve their originality and their life patina as well.
So it's better in some cases not to clean them.
Yep. Yeah.
The other question I had was, you mentioned the Bakelite base on that trophy before.
Yep.
When it loses its shine, how do you get it back?
Bakelite? I don't want to comment. Bakelite is still one of the things in... conservation science is something that... It's evolving. There's always research being done. But with Bakelite, you're safest at this stage, your safest method of cleaning is just an aqueous solution, maybe a bit of soap and lots of rinsing. I've read a few articles about the treatment of Bakelite and trying to rejuvenate and that, but most research that's been done by conservators clearly indicates don't coat, don't polish, soap and water.
Yeah.
Because they're still, I guess they're still trying to learn, you know, more about how it reacts. There's a lot of experimentation that goes on. As with the metals, you know, like that's why there's a conservator at the War Memorial who's a specialist in metals, and if we came across a metal in our collection, we would seek advice about, we don't go through any process of treatment until we know exactly what we're doing.
Mm.
And Bakelite is still one that a lot of research is being done on.
The knife switch there is mine, and I will admit that in cleaning that up when I first got it, I did actually polish the phenolic and Bakelite components on that using Brasso.
Yeah, which is a mild abrasive.
Yeah, because it is a mild abrasive, and I was using it as a polish. But it's not something that I would do professionally for things within the museum collection.
Yeah.
For something of my own where I was going, you know, let's use this as a learning exercise and see if it works and what effect it causes, things like that, I was willing to take the chance. And in that instance, with that particular form of phenolic, it's been okay. But I'd be hesitant to just go, oh, yeah, you can just turn around and do it all the time.
Because sometimes you don't know what the future holds in respect of what you've cleaned that with, you know, the detergents and the carriers of the Brasso, what reaction that will have over a long time of life with the plastic, and whoops, have I destroyed it? No one's going to be... Well, it's not going to be around for people to enjoy in 200 years' time.
And the plastic components are often made to a different recipe every time as well. There's no
always
one standard. So they misbehave in all kinds of interesting ways.
Bakelite, as I understand it, was a sort of chemical, petrochemical process.
Plastic, yeah.
I've got a few old radios and telephones, of course, that have faded over the years, and I just wanted to brighten them up. You're saying, just clean them.
Yeah.
Well, as Andrew says, you know, like if you're prepared to hit it with an abrasive polish, that's fine, but you don't know what's going to happen down the end of the track.
Yeah.
That's why we always stay on the side of caution about processes, you know, we have to be 100% sure before we do something. If we're not sure, we won't, basically.
And that's one of the biggest things about our field as well. It's a constantly evolving thing because every material that we're working on is constantly being redeveloped. And also the treatments that we were doing maybe 20 years ago, the equipment that we use nowadays is a lot more reliable, a lot more stable. So, again, it's a continuous study to work out what the best process is. And often, as we're pointing out here, the best process for one thing isn't necessarily the best process for something else.
Yeah. So continual research and learning. And in our lab, for example, we work in a what we call an objects lab, and we come across wood, plastic, glass, ceramics, metal. It's fine technological objects like our marine chronometers and scientific weighing scales, and every object presents new problems. Same as in paper textiles, there's never a process that repeats itself. It's almost a that you gain knowledge, you build knowledge, and then you adapt that knowledge, but you still have to research and study up a bit before you attack something so that you cover yourself. Because sometimes things that were done in the past, not knocking what happened in the past, but sometimes things that could have been done in a different way, sometimes it can be too late. And then there's another challenge. How do I undo this process that someone else has created, like your radio collection, you know, take it home, put it on a muslin buff with Tripoli, Jewellers Tripoli and Jewellers Rouge, and you get a wonderful finish out of it. But then in 20 years' time, you say, I'm going to donate this to the museum, and the conservator will sit there and say, why is this Bakelite deteriorating? And he'll start looking into a microscope, Raman microscopy, you know, what's happening here, and then finds that there's some reaction because you've washed it with an ammonia solution or a household detergent that had some such and such in it, and that's started reacting with the iron in the Jewellers Rouge, you know, which is just a fine powder in wax, and you're finding this problem starting that, and then how do you reverse that? So yeah, you're presented with a new challenge every time, and that's why guys like this go to uni for 5 years to learn the trade, and then you never stop learning. It's a new game every day.
Any other questions at all?
I've got a very large brass wall plate. It's about so wide. And I've been using Brasso, obviously, on it. So the best thing after the Brasso then would be to make sure you've actually got, because it's got fluted around the edges. So you need to wash that off with a...
Yeah, wash it off. You know, very, very simply, even if it's a very large plate, you probably find that you could go down to the shop and buy a nice little shoe polishing brush with a natural bristle in it, which is reasonably soft. And have your vessel there with your water in it and a bit of detergent, you know, just household detergent, not too strong, just a little bit, and wash it and rinse it and wash it and rinse it until you can look across it and say, no, I haven't got any white residues or with brass, sometimes it just turns green.
For
reasons that Andrew explained up here before.
Would I be better off putting the shellac, some sort of shellac covering on it?
Then you, if you need to do it again, because the metal will still oxidise under shellac if there's a pinhole or a hole, and it'll just creep underneath it. Like the clock cases that I've got in there at the moment, there'll be one little pinhole and the oxidisation will start and then it'll creep underneath the shellac and then you've got to remove all the shellac.
You can get archival grade museum waxes. And it's sort of a wax polish that puts a film all over the surface so that you're not getting the moisture and the pollutants through.
Right.
And if you need to remove that, you can actually wash it off and start again.
So where would you buy something like...
Go to the web, look up museum wax.
Okay. Yeah. Because it doesn't tarnish actually in Canberra nearly as much as it did in Sydney.
We don't have any heavy industry and we have a much lower level of sort of trucking and that kind of thing going through.
Our air's pretty clean.
So we've got quite clean air here. That makes a big difference.
Our temperature fluctuations are nowhere near as severe. The humidity's nowhere near as high.
And so we're not close to the beach.
It's a really good storage place, Canberra.
Yeah, the drier the better. Yeah, but try that. You know, just tub it and see if you can get yourself some microcrystalline wax and coat it with that, and then you probably find that if you do see oxidisation starting or, you know, darkening, you probably then have to remove all that wax, and you have to do that with alcohol or petroleum spirits or whatever the base is for the wax that you've bought to wash it off. And that's a big job.
Yeah.
and a lot of work, a lot of elbow grease, and reversing something like that. So you might be better off not doing a wax coating if you're not sure.
So we've got about 3 minutes left. Does anyone have one last question? No? Okay. The other thing that I just have to let you know about is just to remind you that if you're interested in asking any other questions, we are downstairs between 11 and 3 every day in the temporary gallery. And that would be about it, I think.
Yeah. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.